At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Traina. You can probably hear it. Not sounding great. A little under the weather. Been sick for a couple of weeks, so hang in there. Sorry about my voice, but we do have a good episode, I promise you. We have Jim Miller on the show to talk about what unfolded Monday night in Cincinnati with Damar Hamlin, ESPN's coverage, how they handled everything. Just, you know, an event like we've never seen before, uncharted territories. So we talk about how ESPN handled it. And, you know, podcast is coming out a little later this week. Wanted to wait to see what happens with Hamlin. We taped this on Thursday and we got some really, really good news on Thursday. So it doesn't feel as frivolous to discuss what happened. But, you know, we cover sports media. How ESPN covered things became a story. I think enough time has passed where it's appropriate to discuss it. So we did that with Jim Miller, who knows everything about ESPN. And we did discuss a couple of other media topics. Jim has some very interesting thoughts on the upcoming NBA media deals. Spoke about Al Michaels a little bit. Spoke about Sunday Ticket. So that's what we got for you today. And then Sal Licata joins me for our weekly Train of Thought segment. We read some Apple reviews. I explain how I've been sick for a few weeks, talk about New Year's Eve and some other things. Before we get to anything, I know you guys tied up with the holidays, very busy, may not have checked out the pod the last few weeks. If you didn't, you missed some great episodes. Last week, we did post a new episode the week before New Year's with Peter Schrager, Andrew Perloff, third annual roundtable, end of year spectacular roundtable with those guys. So if you missed that, check it out. 2 weeks ago, we had Brian Curtis from The Ringer, did a year in review of sports media. Greg Olson, Richard Deitch, Mike Tirico, Kevin Burkhardt, all end-of-the-year guests on the SI Media Podcast. So go into the archives, check them out, and subscribe to the pod. All right, Jim Miller, followed by Train of Thoughts on this week's episode of the SI Media Podcast. All right, joining me now, SI Media Podcast regular, author, reporter, and man who has written many books that you should read on ESPN and Saturday Night Live and HBO and others, Jim Miller. Jim, Happy New Year. Hope you're doing
happy
well.
Happy New Year, brother.
You know, nobody knows ESPN better than you. They had some obviously tragic circumstances, Monday Night Football. We all know it, Damar Hamlin. I appreciate you doing this late in the week. I didn't want to do anything early in the week. I wanted to, you know, give the story a chance to breathe. We're taping this on Thursday, and we finally on Thursday got some really great news about Hamlin. So let's hope that keeps going in that direction. Before we even get into ESPN, I just want to say something, and if you want to piggyback on this, you can. But before we get into ESPN or anything, that this is nothing to do with sports, but I just have to say, especially Thursday here, getting that good news, we need to all of us talk more about the slew of medical professionals who, as of now, it looks like, have saved this young man's life. To get the staff on the field in Cincinnati, CPR administered, ambulance to the hospital. Who knows what the staff, you know, at that hospital, you know, how many people are working on him. But, you know, this is a miracle as of now, and hopefully it keeps trending that way. And for that to happen on a football field and for him to get the medical attention and obviously whatever took place so far again has worked is absolutely awesome that it, you know, that here we are with that. So before we even get into any media coverage and stuff, I just, those medical professionals should be commended on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think, look, I think that's the most important story of all, because what happened in those initial 9 minutes when he was on the field was extraordinary. And look, you know, I know that all of us from time to time like to throw some rocks at the NFL, but the protocols that were set up and the expertise that was available to him while he was laying there on the field was extraordinary. And I think, you know, his uncle mentioned that they had to do it twice, that they resuscitate him twice. There's a level of expertise that is, that was on display there that was beyond extraordinary. And obviously it saved his life. And I think that if anything, we all have to take a moment, as you're suggesting now, to really acknowledge not only the experts that were on the field, but the system itself, mm-hmm. because this was such an outlier. I mean, we've seen torn ACLs and we've seen lots of things, but even at an extraordinary mark, I mean, if this was a Richter scale, right, this earthquake was like, you know, a 9.9, they were able to take care of it and to triage and to do everything for him that needed to be done, including, I think it was extraordinary, and I think Troy was the one who pointed out, or maybe Joe, but including making sure that the ambulance stopped on the way out of the field to pick up his mother so his mother could right. be with him. I mean, there was, you know, you don't really, they probably have contingency plans and they rehearse things like this, but when it's happening in real time, you know, it's not like we're talking about a commission now that has to be formed to examine how things can be better. I mean, maybe there are some things to be learned, but I think it was extraordinary to watch it play out. And to go one step further, look, from the worst kind of nightmare that could happen on a player, on a football field, everything that happened after that is kind of worthy of notice, because let's look at the players' reactions. Cincinnati fans could not have been more empathetic and compassionate. I mean, Joe and Troy right there did a fantastic job. And then when you go to, I mean, Susie and Booger and Adam, and then beyond that, I mean, we can talk about, you know, Ryan and Scott, obviously, and the whole, I mean, it was kind of a parade of excellence.
Right.
It was people in the most difficult circumstances and the most extraordinary circumstances doing absolute terrific work.
The circumstances, live TV, it ends up becoming a news story. People want information. There's no information really. And I thought for the most part, you know, and it's one of those things where, like, for me, when something like that happens, the last place I want to be is on Twitter, because people are animals on there. But it's also a place you need to be to get information. All we wanted on Monday night was information. I thought the restraint that ESPN showed and them just saying, listen, we don't know anything, and this is what, you know, this is what it is, was obviously the right move. And go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but when there's not a lot of information and you're live on television, there's such an inclination to start speculating or to bring on people who don't have firsthand knowledge, but who have knowledge about other situations that could be or could not be similar. And I think that the discipline, I mean, Joe said it once, Susie said it, I think the discipline that was exhibited by everyone Monday night to not get into that sphere of speculation was important and part of what made the night and the reporting of the night so impressive.
100%. And, you know, I had people on Twitter saying to me, people were all, it shows you that people have no idea about live TV. Like, we're in this, so we get it. But the average fan, I heard, so some people saying they should stop showing commercials. It's in poor taste. Well, you've got to give these people who are on live TV covering this a chance to collect themselves and figure out what the next step is. So the commercials were important. Then there were people who were saying they should stop going to the studio and Susie and Schefter and Booger and stop going to Joe and Troy and just replay one of the bowl games. Well, you can't do that because this is a breaking news story. So the amount of people who didn't understand the position ESPN was in that night, I guess if you're not in the media world, you don't get it. But that ended up being a breaking news story. It's live television, and they don't have any information. Under those circumstances, they could not have done a better job with what they did.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that if we, you know, if you want to kind of deconstruct it a step further, let's just talk about the passage, because I think each sequence had its own DNA, right? I mean, Troy and Joe were literally just managing the images from the field. I think the directing was beyond compelling because you're seeing the anguish on the players' faces and in the stands with the fans, by the way, the opposing team. And I think that what they did was they made sure that we were in the moment and seeing everything and hearing everything that we could that was real, but not going to other places. And then I think the beauty of going to Susie, Adam, and Booger in the studio was that realization that, you know, there was only so much Joe and Troy could do. Right. And particularly since Joe and Troy both said, look, I've never seen anything like this. I don't even know what to say, because that's not what they do. I mean, if there was other activities going on, they would, of course, cover it. But for a long time, you know, we were just in a holding pattern. And I think that then that transition to the three of them in the studio and doing that level of analysis. And I think, you know, we have to pay attention to the level of emotion that, you know, Booger exhibited. I haven't seen Susie like that since Stuart Scott died, who she was very close to, of course. She's very, very careful about keeping her emotions between the proverbial 40-yard lines, excuse the metaphor. But, you know, she obviously was upset. And I think that, you know, it was an extraordinary moment to give, like, another level of insight. By the time Scott came on, and I think, you know, Ryan clearly was extraordinary. He brought it to a whole other level. But let's start with Scott for a second, because I think Monday night Scott did something that I think we've all known he's been capable of and he's done at certain times. But I think he firmly moved into Bob Lee's shoes at that moment, which is to say that he is exhibiting the gravitas. He is the center. He is, you know, making sure that this thing stays journalistically sound. And then to be able to go to Ryan, who spoke with, you know, such force, such emotion, and you knew that this was the real deal, because on so many different levels, he was the perfect person for that moment. You know, I purposely made a decision to stay away from Twitter because I figured that if there was any news that Twitter would have, ESPN would have it. And I kind of got car sick with all these people. Twitter makes it so easy for people who don't know what the hell they're talking about to just throw these projectiles from their phone, you know, sitting there. And it just becomes, particularly in a situation like that, it becomes, you know, so crazy. And I find even inhuman. So I didn't give a shit about anybody who was tweeting any of those things that you talked about. But I think that passage from Joe and Troy to the studio to Scott and Ryan was, I think, beautifully choreographed.
I agree, and you know, it's a weird thing. You know, we're heaping praise on these people, which is obviously secondary to what happened with Damar Hamlin, but we live in a world now where coverage of the news story is a story. Like, that's just the way it is. And if someone on ESPN would have done something really bad or screwed up in any way, they would have gotten torn apart for it. So I think it's important to give them the credit for how they handled it. And it's interesting because I kept going, you know, I thought obviously Troy and Booger McFarland and Ryan Clark as the ex-players were all very powerful, very eloquent, you know, speaking of the brotherhood players, it was such an important element. And I know Ryan Clark got a lot of praise, but, and they all deserve it. And I'm not taking anything away from them, but I do want to point out with Joe, Susie, and especially Scott, when you're the traffic cop on live TV during a breaking news story, and then a life and death breaking news story, and you've got people in your ear and you've got to go to this reporter, then go back to Ryan Clark, then go to this person, throw it to commercial. I don't think people understand how difficult that is. And especially in the case of Van Pelt, you know, he couldn't have done it smoother, no hiccups. Joe was navigating things from the field. Now, we'll get into this whole thing with the 5-minute thing, but I just, you know, the ex-players were so important. And I think the quote unquote anchors like Joe and Susie and especially Scott, that is as, they're not going to have a more difficult assignment ever in their careers, and they all handled it as well as you could have.
I mean, I think that's why they're pros, and that's why they've been doing it for as long as they have, but it still was something, it was an outlier. So they needed to reach another level. And look, when it's live TV, I mean, we're not sitting here today going over some of the mistakes or some of the crazy things that were said or some of the, you know, I think that sometimes good news travels slow in our world. And so we need to point out that both from a production point of view, technically and editorially speaking, you know, despite the worst circumstances imaginable, everybody was excelling at what they were supposed to do at that time. And I also feel like one of the legacies, I hope, of Monday night will be that there is this opportunity for people to be content without criticizing and to be able to watch things without, you know, giving their own kind of like 2 cents on, well, what should have been done. I think, you know, should is always a very, very dangerous word, but at least for me, to be able to sit back and say, these guys got it. You know, this is impressive. They're on top of this. I don't need to be looking at Twitter. I don't need to be, you know, wincing when someone says something that's, you know, way off, you know, off the reservation. I mean, that's pretty remarkable.
The NFL took the biggest hit because people kept waiting for them to cancel the game. And it became a theme on ESPN. I mean, Booger said it, you know, well, just cancel this game already. It was a big theme on. And the last thing I would ever want to do is give the NFL the benefit of the doubt. But I think they were, in that initial 30 minutes to 60 minutes, they're dealing with this situation. They got to canceling the game. They had to first, I think, deal with what was going on with Damar Hamlin. I don't want to defend the NFL, but people were outraged it wasn't canceled or postponed sooner. There's a lot of logistics there. I mean, that are going on. I mean, I don't think it's outlandish that they waited an hour to officially postpone it, but everyone.
No, but I also feel like, look, remember, at the end of the day, that thing was on ESPN because ESPN is a rights holder.
Right. It was also, just to add, it was also on ABC. Right. I think that added a whole other, because I watched it on ABC and not even realizing I was on ABC. And then at 11 Eastern, they maybe did a reset or something, and that's when I shut it off. But go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
But the point is, though, that the NFL has a incredible history of being very sensitive with their rights holders. And yet there was Booger being able to walk up to the line and say, you can't play this game. You know, others said it too. And I think that showed, I mean, it's not a profile in courage, but I think that they were able to articulate what they believed in at the moment and not being sitting around saying, is anybody at, you know, 285 Park Avenue going to come down on us or punish us for this? I think it was a remarkably candid conversation, in real time. And I don't think anybody was shooting from the hip, and they were saying what needed to be said.
Absolutely. And I hate that now we're in this, he said, she said, tit for tat thing with Joe saying the game would resume in 5 minutes. I'll say this. First of all, why is this important? Okay, Joe said that the players were told they're going to have 5 minutes warm up. The NFL says that never happened. We're going to go back and forth on this, really? How about we just leave it alone, okay?
Well, no foul. I'm going to disagree with you on that because okay. It was a remarkable moment because what it did do was, let's just say for a second that it was true that the producer who told Joe said he heard it from the NFL, that all of a sudden launched an entirely different narrative. And that was, wait a second, is the NFL really serious about that? Is that what the powers that be, particularly Roger, want to do at this moment? Second of all, it then creates a situation where ESPN is bringing new meaning to the footage of the coaches talking and some of the players talking, and whether or not we're going to see one of the great uprisings, for lack of a better phrase, in NFL history. Because if the NFL had indeed said that, and the coaches were like, I don't care what they say, we're not playing this game, and the players said that too, then that's a whole other thing to cover. And it's also, quite frankly, it's something that the NFL has to think about if that's what they were doing in that moment of time. Now, maybe they said that at a specific moment, and then once they realized how probably deleterious it was to their, to their brand and also to the teams themselves and the players, maybe they wanted to shove that toothpaste back in the tube. I'm not sure.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it
was highly significant.
Yeah. I guess I feel like it's in bad taste now that Troy Vincent is coming out with statements every day to defend themselves. I'll say this. I mean, you're in what you said, you're correct. I mean, I sort of meant like, do we need to, like, here we are on Thursday. Do we still need to be going back and forth about this? Let's move forward. That's what I meant by that. But I'll say this. If this is going to be a he said, she said, which it is right now, I mean, there's no chance on earth I would believe the NFL just based on history. Joe Buck and ESPN and an ESPN producer are not going on the air with that information if someone didn't tell them that. They're not making that up.
Who the hell makes that up?
Under any circumstances, is that being made up? So if you're telling me if it's going to get into who you believe, I mean, I'm always going to believe the side that's opposite of the NFL. But in this case, especially, ESPN is not making Joe Buck say that if someone didn't tell them that. It's just an absurd thing for anyone to believe.
I mean, maybe it was a case of whispering down a lane and there was a miscommunication, like, in 5 minutes, we're going to make a decision, or in 5 minutes, we're going to check with the players and the coach and whatever. And somehow that got, by the time it got to the producer, it got,
it changed,
but I don't think so. I don't think anybody would be crazy enough to make it up. And the truth is that since the league has been so insistent that they never said that, I think that they should do an investigation and, quite frankly, trace every single communication that was, even if they have to sit everybody down that was in the truck or whatever, and isolate that moment, because I think it does matter. And I think it will matter for the future, and you also, if I'm ESPN, I don't want to be sitting there being called, a liar, or said that we made such a significant mistake on air.
Right. That's why I think Troy Vincent should leave it alone at this point, but he seems to be doubling down. And again,
well, if he's going to double down, then he better double down with a thorough investigation. So we understand exactly how that could have happened.
100%.
But there were moments. I mean, look, I know you're a fan of Scott's too. And I think that, to watch people who are, I mean, Scott earned that job. He's one of the highest paid anchors at ESPN. He's been there for a long time. It's been a lot of fun to watch the trajectory of his career. And you know, even though the circumstances were evil and awful and incredibly, incredibly sad for everyone, to watch someone excel, to watch them all excel at that moment, you know, pretty damn impressive, because we're so used to things happening. And then the next day we have to say, oh my God, can you believe so-and-so did that? And can you believe they decided to do that? And you can you believe, you know, that they didn't have the footage from there, or there was no one at the hospital? I mean, there's probably 20 things that could have gone wrong, and there could have been a big synapse for us to discuss. And none of them occurred.
Yeah. And I, you know, I appreciate it when someone's on TV, radio, wherever, and they say, I don't know. And no one knew anything on Monday night. There was very, very little information. And I appreciate the fact that they said repeatedly, we don't have any information. When we have it, we'll give it to you. I mean, that's all you can do there. And I, you know, there would be, I think, other people who maybe wouldn't be that straightforward about it. And that's what I appreciated the most about ESPN's coverage on Monday night.
I think there's also one other side point, and I want to be careful here, because I don't want this to be a dig. But I also feel like we're watching ESPN, and if it was NBC or CBS, you would have had, you know, that similar level of excellence, maybe more. But I would say that if you look at Amazon, even though the great Freddie Gadelli is there and Al and everybody else, do they have the back bench, so to speak, or the supporting cast, or the other arteries that ESPN had on display to cover something like that, if God forbid something like that were to happen on a Thursday night? I mean, obviously they have great people working on the broadcast, but I think that one of the things that happened Monday night was we were watching an iceberg. We were watching Troy and Joe and Susie and Booger and Ryan and Scott and Adam and but there was like a big, big army at the hospital, at, you know, wherever. And, you know, in fairness to Amazon, maybe they don't have those numbers. Maybe they don't have those capabilities. And it's just interesting to, I guess, for them, they may have been thinking about that this week, that God forbid, if that ever happens on our watch, you know, how do we deploy the kind of extensive coverage and the layers of coverage and, you know, all that was attended to that from even a journalistic point of view that we saw Monday night? It's a challenge.
Yeah. I don't think the average viewer understands what a challenge that was to do live TV 3-4 hours with no information. Not easy.
And I think that, you know, looking ahead to this weekend, I think that everyone who covers the NFL on air or, you know, from sidelines or just in the trucks, I think that there's another level of coverage that they're going to be doing that they haven't maybe done before. I remember talking with everyone after 9/11 when sports went back, and I'm not equating what happened, the injury, to 9/11. Obviously, they're vastly different. But I think that when you have such an emotional component, when you're coming off something that is such a tragedy, you need to infuse your coverage with a different level of, it's a different kind of narrative. It's a different voice. And I think that there's probably a lot of discussions going on right now at the various networks about that, you know, because this just didn't, I mean, this obviously happened to him and it happened to the Buffalo Bills, but it obviously was also quickly a part of the Cincinnati Bengals and the fans there. And I think every single player in the NFL is going to be aware of it, you know, as they take the field.
I'm curious to see what happens this Sunday, because I think obviously this will be the dominating theme on all of the pregame shows. I do wonder though, during game coverage, outside of obviously, you know, Bills games and Bills playing the Patriots, Bengals playing the Ravens, I would guess the NFL might tell their partners there, like, you know, let's limit it during games. You know, the NFL just wants to get back to normal as soon as possible.
Well, and I think you also know that the people who are going to be covering these games also, and the players themselves, also aware of the violent nature of the sport. And that was in existence before Monday night. And we've had plenty of examples on the field where difficult things happen. This was, like I said, an outlier. But I don't think anyone who covers the game is all of a sudden aware of the fact that it's such a violent game, and what the risks and rewards and what's at stake for these players are every single week.
Yeah. And sort of wrapping up this discussion, I mean, obviously, like I said, it's all about DeMar Hamlin making progress. He seems to be finally doing that, which is outstanding. Hopefully, even, you know, by Sunday, maybe you get some more good news and the pregame shows can, you know, you want to just keep going forward and keep getting positive updates. And, you know, I know it's frustrating for everyone because the updates have been few and far between, but as long as they're good, that's really all that matters.
I tweeted, a month ago or something, there was a memorial for someone. And I said, you know, every time I go to one of these memorials, I often think, God, I hope the person knew the depth of affection and reverence and respect that they had while they were alive. And there's nothing more exciting to think about, Damon, like being not only obviously better, but to also see the extraordinary support for him, the love that players had, he originally wanted to raise $2,500 for his foundation. It's over $7 million. I mean, this will be, you know, a wonderful, wonderful, in the midst of obviously having to recover, and Lord knows we hope he continues to recover, but what a blessing that will be for him to be able to see how much he meant to so many people.
Yes, absolutely. See, and every report you've seen, everything you've read about him seems just like a really great kid.
Yeah. By the way, if people haven't seen it, check out Mike Tomlin's remarks. Tomlin, you know, he was a Pittsburgh kid. Tomlin has known him since he was 12 years old. And I thought Mike did a great job of talking about him as well. They haven't seen that.
When you said you sent out a tweet about someone hoping, you know, it'd be nice if they knew the praise guy. Was that about Grant Wall by any chance? Do you know? Because
it was. It was.
Yeah, because one of the things, you know, I worked with Grant for like 15, 16, 17 years. I was at his memorial the week before Christmas. And with Grant, I kept thinking about, you know, 49 years old in great shape, 49 years old in great shape, 49 years old in great shape. And now here you have DeMar Hamlin, 24 years old. It's, I don't know how it doesn't shake you up in some way, shape, or form, you know, when
right. I mean, the thing that made me write that about Grant, who I adored, was that obviously Grant had fans, and he played, he was keenly aware, and he took it as a big responsibility of the impact that he could make through his own journalism and what he wrote and what he said, particularly about soccer. But I feel like even Grant, I mean, you knew him longer, but I think even Grant would have been amazed at
absolutely
the depth of not only because he was 49 and it was so shocking, but I think that the number of people came, the coverage itself, I mean, evening news and everything else, but the number of people came out to talk about singular experiences with him, you know, not just colleagues over many years, and to talk about, Will Leach wrote a beautiful, beautiful column. So many people did. John Skipper, who worked with Grant and, in different ways, had a beautiful statement. But I think even Grant would have been just incredibly shocked by just the power and the depth of the reactions.
Yes, I kept thinking that when we were at his memorial. It was, the outpouring was tremendous. I'll transition, and hopefully it's not too awkward, but is there anything you want to say in closing about the DeMar Hamlin situation, ESPN's coverage, media coverage, Hamlin himself, the NFL, before we sort of try to move on, not too awkwardly?
I just feel like, I feel like I'm almost addicted to seeing the latest reports, and you just crave them so much. And it's just, we're all going through this together. And just the idea that we heard that he gripped a, you know, family member's hands, or that his eyes opened, or, I mean, each one of these is, given the enormity of what we saw on the field and what we heard immediately afterwards, each one of these things is cause for celebration. And so at this point, I actually am back to Twitter and addicted to seeing or hearing everything I can about it. And there have been several great reporters at the hospital who are doing incredible work, and I just can't get enough of it. So, you know, just hope that it continues to come.
And it goes back to what I said at the top, the medical professionals on the scene in Cincinnati and at the hospital, just heroes all around.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably just saying that that's what we do as a job, but I hope at some point we're really going to get to see up close and personal, as they say, you know, the people who came rushing onto the field.
Yes, absolutely.
That was incredible.
Yeah. It feels bizarre to transition into other stuff, but I have you here. So I might as well just ask you a couple of quick questions about some media things. And, you know, we make this awkward transition, but we'll do it. We'll stay with NFL very quickly. Anything we should know about Sunday Ticket going to YouTube? Do you think this will be good for the NFL, good for fans? Does it matter that it's not Apple? You have anything on that?
I think fans, when they're sitting in their living rooms on a Sunday, they're not talking about, I'm going to turn on YouTube. I wish it was Apple, because it was, I think the NFL is, you know, it's so important to so many people in terms of watching it, that they're going to just find it wherever they are. I do think, though, that it has to make sure that it's technically proficient. And you can't have a lot of screw-ups, and the navigation has to be incredible. Now they're already talking about it's going to be this kind of level or this kind of level. I mean, they have to make it as simple and as accessible as possible, because otherwise that's going to piss people off.
Right, 100%. A lot of rumblings about NBA television deals coming up.
It's the next big monster. And boy, oh boy, it's so interesting given what's happening with media companies right now, right? I mean, even since the last NFL deal, you look at some of the companies, I mean, CBS's market value decreased so much. I mean, who knows whether they would have made the same deal now that they would have. But I think when we talk about the NBA, everybody turns first and foremost to Warner Brothers Discovery. I think David Zaslav did a little bit of posturing, saying, well, we don't really need it. We don't really need exactly what we have. You know, you have that incredible shoulder programming that Turner has attended to it. People are big fans of that. I'm not sure that given what the NBA thinks it can get and what it probably will get, I'm not sure that Warner Brothers Discovery is going to be able to replicate the package they have now. And maybe they're going to come up with a narrative that they're going to just do a smaller package. It'll be split probably three ways, maybe even four. Adam Silver, he's entrepreneurial. Even when David Stern was commissioner, Adam was always highly inventive about technologies and the international footprint of the NBA. I wouldn't kind of sit around just assuming that they're not going to have some creativity to this package.
Could you see Warner Discovery / TNT being out of the NBA business altogether?
They may have to be. I mean, who knows what their financial exigencies are, but unless all of a sudden, I mean, they have another problem too, which is that the NBA is going to want this broadcast component no matter what, right? You know, here we are back with broadcasting. And so there's definitely going to be partnerships, and I'm not sure how much of a stake they're going to be able to afford.
Outside of the streaming world with Apple, Amazon, Google, can you foresee a network that doesn't currently have NBA rights getting NBA rights?
I mean, look, I think you have to think about NBC and whether NBC wants to get back in there or not. And I mean, they had it for many years and they did a tremendous job with it. So that'll be very, very interesting. And you also have the whole issue of ESPN/ABC's future and whether ESPN is going to be spun off. And I mean, you know, the deal is not going to happen anytime. I mean, immediately. So there could be some machinations that happen in terms of mergers or joint venture that could fundamentally change even the lineup, even the potential customers. So I think this is one of the more dynamic major rights acquisitions that we've seen in recent years.
I'm not sure you'd have a bigger media if Warner Brothers Discovery, which is TNT, got out of the NBA game, and you had all those guys, Ernie, Shaq, Kenny, and Charles as free agents. That would be as crazy as what we just had in this past offseason with the NFL, with all the announcers switching.
Right. Well, Al, even though he wound up at Amazon, was entitled to his big paycheck. Troy and Joe got their big ones. Tony got, Lord knows, got his. I mean, they all got significant raises. Chris Collinsworth, you know, so I think if that happens on the NBA side, those guys, let's face it, those guys deserve it. And I think that when you're paying for the NBA, you have to think about that as an inherent cost. You can't, you know, I mean, look how much ESPN has struggled with their NBA shoulder programming. I mean, you know, when Bill Simmons and Sage Steele and Michelle Beadle and there was Magic Johnson and there was, I mean, they've never really been able to get it right. Turner got it right. They have it right. And so if they're out of the business, I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, I would hope that those guys would just sign a blood oath saying none of us are going without the others.
Right.
100%. This is a package deal. Step up to the plate, swallow hard, and pay us. Yeah. Because that's the only way we want to see those guys together, and they deserve to be paid, you know, as much as they can get.
It's interesting to me. I mean, listen, NBA regular season ratings are what they are. And I get it's a inventory deal because you can get so much inventory out of the NBA, but given what the ratings are, it's, you know, can you fault Warner Brothers if they don't want to pay billions of dollars to get a 2 rating during the week? I don't know.
I mean, look, but some of this is just about sports in general, because you look at some of the NFL games this year, excuse me, they were so dreadful. And it pisses you off because the level of play, even, I mean, it was just, you know, 6-3 at the end of the third quarter and, you know, 3 fumbles and 4 interceptions and stuff. This is not a meritocracy. I mean, yes, there are elite teams in the NBA and the NFL that we, you know, that kind of carry. And then, by the way, that's true of Major League Baseball too.
Yep.
You know, so it's part of what you bargain for, and it's part of what you're paying for, which is that it isn't like a level playing field, and you're going to have some, you know, particularly during the season of the NBA, because it's so long, you're going to have some stuff that isn't moneymaker, but man, when it comes down to the playoffs, you're going to want it. And that's when you pay for it.
Last thing before I let you go, you mentioned Al a couple of times. You think there's any chance at all after the rough season for Thursday night on Amazon, Al says, you know, I don't need this shit anymore. I'm going to not do these last 2 years.
Well, I think that those of us who love Al and who have watched Al throughout his career, if you get in the business of predicting what Al Michaels is going to do, I mean, look, I think he said to NBC that he was going to be you know, going off into the sunset and then decided he wanted two more years and, you know, basically decided he wanted to. I think I'm certainly not going to try and guess what's going on in his head. And by the way, even if I knew what was going on in his head right now, I'm not going and betting on it that that's going to be the case later on.
Yeah, I was more looking for like speculation because I could also see the flip side of where Al says, listen, next year's schedule can't possibly be as bad as this year's. So let's, you know, give it another whirl.
Right. And that's why it's so unpredictable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think, look, Freddie Gaudeli, who is probably the best there is, one of the best, you know, he's kind of had his career decisions and by and large has kind of stuck by them. But with Al, I mean, who knows? I really don't know. I think at this point, though, it's safe to say that it's been a frustrating season, and maybe the $14 million or so that he's getting paid has made it at least somewhat less cumbersome.
Somewhat tolerable, yeah. Speaking of people who make a lot of money, I can't let you go without asking you if you know anything about Curb. We know Curb and Larry, we know they're shooting. They're shooting another season.
They've shot a lot. They've shot a lot.
What do we know? Anything about Curb coming out?
I think I haven't gotten it definitively from HBO, but I'm hoping for a spring launch. You know, I mean, if they get into, I mean, the great thing about HBO for Larry is he could say to them, "Yeah, that's fine. I'll be done by February." And if he's not, he'll just call them up and say, "Yeah, no, it's going to be April or whatever," and they'll adapt. You know, but where it's so, you know, it's pretty amazing. I don't know if you follow Richard Lewis on Twitter, but there's every day is like the first day of school for Richard with Curb coming back. And so you know, we'll see. But it's pretty amazing that Larry still wants to do it.
Hopefully Richard can, I know he had health problems the last season, so he wasn't in it much. Hopefully.
Right.
Now he'll
he's already been shooting. He's already been involved in the shooting. Yeah. And
hopefully we'll see more of him.
You know, you can't root against Richard Lewis.
No, he's so good on that show. I appreciate you coming on, especially
good to see you. Happy New Year,
tough
man.
Topic. Same to you. Thank you for your insight. It's appreciated. And let's hope we keep getting good news here on DeMar Hamlin. That's all we need is good news, you know.
Absolutely.
As each day passes.
It's you know, no offense against the chaos going on the house floor, but I want my updates about DeMar more than anything else.
Yep, I'm with you on that. Jim, thank you. Appreciate it, everyone. Can follow Jim on Twitter. Get the books, the HBO book, the SNL book is tremendous, the ESPN book. And the most recent one about HBO really was great. So check them out.
And thanks so much, man.
Stay well.
All right, take care.
Thanks. All right, joining me now, first time in 2020. I don't know how I'm going to do this. Hang on, I got to start over. All right, 3, 2. All right, joining me now, first time in 2023. Our Train of Thought segment kicks off. Sal Licata from WFAN Radio, SNY TV in New York. Sal, how are you?
You sound like shit.
I know. I'm sick.
Happy New Year. Sick. No, I mean,
oh,
I know,
yeah. Happy fucking New Year. Christmas was ruined. New Year's was ruined.
Oh, no. All of it was ruined. I had that last year.
I escaped COVID for 3 years, and then the day after Christmas tested positive.
Yeah, I forget exactly what I texted you, but I mean, you had a tremendous run. The fact that you were able to avoid it for 3 years, that is a hell of a run right there. But the timing's unfortunate. Literally a year ago is when I got it, and it was the worst week of my life after Christmas into New Year's. And now you text me, you're like, oh, we got COVID. And
well,
you know, it sucked when it's
I have to say, whatever is going on with me now is worse than when I had COVID. I had COVID, it was a week ago Monday. It's been 11 days and I was fine the last few days, 100% felt great. And then Wednesday late afternoon started coughing again and my voice is gone.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the deal is currently. I just remember it legit took months to fully recover.
Well, my issue is just that I have a lot of phlegm and mucus. Sorry if anyone's eating, but I don't get. I grow up. Don't be a baby about stuff like that. So once I can get rid of the phlegm and mucus from my throat and nose, I'll be fine. I feel fine. It's just I sound like hell.
Yeah. Well, as long as you feel okay, I think that's all that matters.
Yeah, I feel totally fine. Then I open my mouth and I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Fun times. Did you stay up for midnight on New Year's Eve?
What, are you kidding me? I haven't stayed up for midnight in probably 5 years. The last time I think I stayed up for midnight was when you and I went to the Billy Joel concert at Barclays. I mean, but I think how.
But you work from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. or midnight to 5 a.m., depending on your schedule. So, like.
Well, remember, I was filling in on the morning show for Boomer and Geo the week between Christmas and New Year's. So that Saturday, I'm still on the clock of waking up at 4 a.m., going to bed, you know, early. My wife and I watched the movie. We were going to go out to dinner, and then we just. It was kind of crappy out. We had the baby, 7 o'clock. We were really going to go out to dinner. We both kind of got lazy, stayed in, watched a movie, went to bed at probably, I'd say, 10, 10:30.
Wow.
Yeah. Lame. I know. I'm freaking old. I know.
Well, no, it's not that. I just, you know, I thought what your schedule would be easy for you to. First of all, here's the thing. You have to care about. Like, I don't really care about seeing the ball drop. And I certainly don't care about watching Ryan Seacrest.
Well, I told you, we discussed this. You hate Seacrest, but I hate New Year's. Like, I don't like the feeling of, this is how I would phrase it, impending doom as the ball is dropping and the seconds are ticking off the clock. I don't want to see that. It gives me high anxiety. So even if I were up, I wouldn't have watched
it. Well, what was good about this New Year's for me is that we had the college football playoff, and it was really crazy that Ohio State attempted a game-winning field goal literally right at midnight when the ball was dropping. The timing of it was wild.
I did see that after when they kind of mashed the two calls together. I thought that was cool. Or the ball dropping and then the kick.
Yeah. Doug, you know, we both love Chris Russo. He had a great heat on First Take. He had a throwaway line about it, something about, you know, oh, I'm not kissing Genie at midnight. I'm watching the guy try to kick a field goal. I had Ohio State. It's poor.
It's an oldie but goodie.
But I thought about that, about how many people have someone there who wants to watch the ball drop and Ohio State's kicking it and attempting a game-winning field goal at midnight.
You know, that's a great point. You had to have if there were ever a need for a two TV setup, that is it on New Year's Eve.
Seriously. One of the things, so what bummed me out about having COVID is I got very lucky. Like I said, I felt fine. I just had a cough. I didn't lose taste. I didn't lose smell. I didn't feel tired. I just had this really bad cough. And now I'm over COVID, but I'm all stuffed with mucus and phlegm. So what bummed me out is that, you know, I had taken the week off from work and couldn't do anything because I had a quarantine. And I paid very little attention to what was going on in sports, except for, you know, I paid very little attention to Twitter. I watched the NFL, obviously. I'm going to do that no matter what.
Yeah.
But there was one story I saw that made me wish I was writing a column because it was really one of the most disgusting and vile things I've ever seen. And I don't know if you saw it. Excuse me, because I know you don't pay close attention to the college football, but. Did you see what Texas coach Steve Sarkisian did
at bowl game? You know what? I saw a little bit of it, but I don't know the details. I saw that who did he yell at or something like that? Wasn't he
yelled at some poor guy who was in charge of like organizing the sidelines or whatever, you know, and I think he put his hand on Sarkisian's chest to hold him back until they were ready to go on the field.
Right.
And Sarkisian just went completely off on this guy like a complete maniac. It was ridiculous.
There's video of it?
You've got to see this video. You will get livid.
Yeah, and I don't like him anyway. He's obviously had some off-the-field issues. Former Atlanta Falcons offensive coordinator. Doesn't seem like a good guy to me. So I've never really warmed up to him. But do I even want to see this? It's going to make me despise.
It's going to make you mad.
Yeah, I don't want to be angry, but I'll watch
it. It was the only time in 10 days where I wish I was writing a train of thoughts because I would have just went nuts. But that was it. There was really nothing else significant. I barely watched the bowl games because, I don't know, the college football. It's so weird when they put those bowl games after the playoff. The playoff was New Year's Eve. And then on Monday, which was technically a holiday, even though it was January 2nd, they played like three bowl games in the Rose Bowl. I couldn't get into it at all.
Yeah. You know, I hate when they do that. And I'll tell you another thing. I know that this is nobody's fault. There's nothing you can do about it. I hate the way that the holidays fell this year. I don't like having like that Monday where it's, you know, the day after where people are acknowledging or what companies are honoring right. the holiday. Like, I just hate that feel. It was very weird. I want Christmas. Ideally, Christmas Eve should line up on a Thursday night. Christmas Eve, Thursday, Christmas Friday, Saturday, Sunday, give you plenty of time to get back into money. Every Thursday, Christmas should fall on a Thursday every single year. That's
well, you got
to
wait like 5 more years for that because next year it'll be a Monday, then a Tuesday, then Wednesday. You got to wait 4 more years. I don't know if there's a leap.
Guess that's not – if it's on – the way that it has been the last couple years to me has been the worst. I don't want the day after Christmas to be a Monday. That's the worst. Yeah. But if you have a midweek, then you just have an excuse to take off the whole week, which is fine. New Year's Eve should be on a Friday or Saturday. I'm fine with that. But Christmas should always be on a Thursday, Christmas Eve.
I don't know if you saw this news because it happened probably shortly before you went on the air on SNY here in New York at 6 o'clock. But did you see Vince is basically threatening to come back to the WWE?
Yeah. So can you explain this to me? I did because people were texting it to me. I don't understand it. He doesn't still own the company?
He's a stockholder or share. I don't know anything about business, but he's a stock. He's on the board. He's on the board.
Okay.
And I guess so he's the majority. Well, they're saying he's going to come back to sell the company.
Well, why can't he just do it without coming back?
I don't know. But there's also something about so the WWE television deals with Fox and NBC, which owns USA, apparently the contracts are coming up and they got to negotiate new media deals. And Vince wants to be part of the media deals. And he said something like he won't sign off on any new media deals if he's not brought back to the company. He's like Tony Soprano.
So he's a shareholder still, but they booted him for all the discretions. So he's not in the company right now. He's not active. He wants to come back, be active, and then sell it off. And if he does sell it off, so, like, here's what I care about. A, are we going to see him on TV again? B, if he does sell it off, is Stephanie and Triple H running things still?
I don't think anyone knows like the answer to that yet.
Right, but those are the only questions that would be relevant to us. Who cares about the stockholders?
What's relevant to me is I'm curious about the new media deals. Like, I don't think Fox is probably I think Fox thought they'd get a lot more from getting SmackDown on Friday nights.
Why don't they get good ratings or they don't?
I don't think it's what they really thought they would get. And who knows if they want to continue with Peacock. I mean,
I hope they don't. I haven't subscribed to Peacock in a while. I'd like it to go somewhere else and maybe I could use it then. But either I haven't watched that in a while. It just feels different. Is AEW still beating them in ratings or are they beating? Were they ever?
No.
I think
they did maybe once or twice, but.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that was it. All right. Even though my voice is shot, let's close out 2022 and put it behind us by reading the last reviews that came in. And then we'll get you out of here. And all right. There's not a ton. I guess people are too busy celebrating the holidays to leave me a review. Really nice, guys. Thanks. I can't complain, though. The pod's been doing great, so I appreciate that. All right. Here's some reviews. Let's see. Here we go. This is RZW990. Jimmy, loved your comment on your year in review show about Aaron Rodgers. I used to respect him based on his talent, but the blatant lies about COVID, throwing teammates under the bus, taking some freaky drug, and a narcissistic person just drives me crazy. He's been to one Super Bowl, chokes for 10 years in the playoffs. I don't listen to Pat McAfee's podcast because of Aaron Rodgers. I mute my TV whenever they talk about him. I love your podcast. Keep up the good work. So on the year-end roundtable with Schrager and Perloff, I had said I was just so sick and tired of Aaron Rodgers' act, and this person responded, and he's way more tired of Aaron Rodgers' act than I am.
And how about Rodgers even now? Like, oh, I'd go play there, potentially at Miami, or this might be my last game. Yeah, I've had enough of them. I think Detroit's going to beat them, by the way, Sunday night, and I'll be rooting for that.
Well, the NFL really – the schedule – like the NFL wants the Packers and Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs so bad because if the Seahawks
Packers win, they're in. Detroit needs Seattle to lose and they have to beat the Packers to get in.
Right. But
You're saying if the Seahawks lose their game, that
makes no. If the Seahawks win, then the Lions are playing for nothing.
Correct. Then it's only about the Packers.
Right.
Well, it's going to be either the Packers or Seahawks. Right. Yeah, that does. But what other game would you have put there?
They should have played. The Seahawks game needed to be played at the same time as the Packers-Lions game. Because if the Seahawks win, there's no reason for the Lions to go win.
Right, but what would you then do for the primetime game? Would you have gone Titans-Jaguars?
I don't know. You could like that whatever was, other that game be, means something.
Yeah, I don't know. But there's either way you're going to have a game without two meaning something. And that has the potential to be, if Seattle loses, elimination game.
Right. Here we go. Andrew Stoley. The continued evolution of this podcast should continue to inspire the bulk of the audience, as given the lack of guests and discussion on the topic lately, Jimmy seems to have realized no one cares about pro wrestling. We just spoke about pro wrestling. Can't thank you enough. Sal continues to be a welcome addition to the pod and has some of the biggest balls ever for publicly disclosing his, quote, playbook for not helping out with anything on Christmas with his family. Anyways, early sports media podcast switch for 2023 roundtable with Trainer Deitch, Marshan, and O'Ran. You could maybe do it as a crossover multi-part show with each podcast hosting episode. Thanks again, and Happy New Year. So did you do any work on Christmas with the family, or did you get out of it?
No, I ended up getting out of it somehow. And it didn't look pleasant, the way that they were doing the turkey thing. I got there. We ended up getting there late. And I'm thinking, this is great. I'm not going to have to do shit. And I get there and nothing was set up. And I'm like, uh-oh. Even my wife looked at me like, hey, you may have to help out with the chickens, which I would have done. But the way that it was, you know, my brother-in-law ended up going in the garage. They're heating up the freaking deep frying thing. I'm like, don't you need to put a cover on that? Like, I don't want to mess around with they get the fire extinguisher ready to go. I'll be inside having some brownies and water, whatever it is. Like, leave me alone.
But brownies, no, I didn't have to water. Do what a kind of combination is that?
Well, I couldn't eat and drink poorly because I had to be up for the morning show at 6 a.m. the next day, which is why I want Christmas on a Friday.
Unbelievable. I'm going to cough. I'm going to try to turn away from the mic so you don't hear it. Wait.
Yeah, you're
right. All right. I don't have a cough button.
You don't have a cough button over there?
I probably do, but who knows? I say cough into the mic and let the people hear it. That's my philosophy. Yeah. All right. Leem Dog. Love this show. Great mix of sports media experts and stars. Always gets big name guests that are thoughtful and entertaining. The weekly Train of Thought segment is always a hit with funny banter about sports and pop culture. I did. You know, here's the thing. I was trapped in my house for 5 days. You think I would have binged a show, watched something new? Like, all I do is watch old stuff on YouTube. Did you watch anything over the break that stuck out to you? Did you try anything different?
No, because I don't even remember. I mean, there were some shows or some movies. We watched the movie with Mila Kunis that's on Netflix. It was okay. There was a couple of movies there. But other than that, no, nothing during the holidays that we binged on that was memorable.
I was on a big run of watching like live music clips on YouTube. That's what I did a lot of.
Do you do Cobra Kai or no? Did we talk about this?
Yeah, I watched it.
Oh, okay. That was last year when I had COVID and it was released on New Year's. That was what we binged, which I love, but yeah, not this year.
Seth from Jersey, love the show and listen every week. Jimmy and Sal could be a great modern day Odd Couple TV series, but it's unclear to me who is Felix and who is Oscars. Both seem like Oscars. One show suggestion, bring on occasional sports gambling industry reporters, experts, maybe just before or after the NFL season. Thanks, fellas. You know, I don't know. You know, people give me shit about the wrestling. And while I do think a lot of people who listen to this podcast gamble, not everyone. I mean, I think that's also still a little bit of an itch thing.
Yeah, I mean,
I've had Todd Furman on periodically.
Like, don't you think if somebody wanted that content, they'll go find it? There's a billion places that offer that. So I don't know.
Yeah. I don't want to get into doing picks and all, you know, I think
we started doing that and then we just gave up.
I know. The business of it is interesting. And some of, you know, I mean, I do have some, I don't know, maybe I would have someone on because I do think, like, I use DraftKings and I think FanDuel does the same thing. Like, they want to suck you into betting same game parlay so badly. It's not even funny because that's where they make all their money. And they're always offering these things. And it's just not good. Who's Oscar? Who's Felix? I don't know.
I don't even. I know the show. I'm not familiar with it enough to tell you the difference between the two.
That's terrible. It's a great show.
You watched it?
Loved it.
Yeah.
Used to be the Odd Couple and the Honeymooners back to back, 11 and 11:30 on Channel 11 when I was a kid.
Honeymooners, yes, I'm familiar with that. I've watched a little bit of the Odd Couple. I saw one episode with Howard Cosell. Maybe I saw a link somebody posted with Howard Cosell and one. It was great.
I mean, it shows my age, but the Odd Couple is a great show. Disgraceful that you never watched it. Tim Mayer, cool pod. I love that review.
Best review of the year.
That's the way to do it. The last review, Buckeye for Life. Very impressive interviews with great guests. Jimmy and Sal are hilarious with thoughtful discussions and banter. I appreciate all of the kind words. I love that people are into Sal. Please leave more reviews. We'll read them. And hopefully next week I don't sound like I'm about to croak.
Yeah, feel better. Will you get better? Drink, as my mother would say, drink some tea. Put some honey.
Oh my God, I've had so much tea. It's not even funny. Tea and soup. All right, Sal, Happy New Year. Glad you're back. We'll see you next week.
All right, feel better. Talk to you later.
Thanks. Take it easy. All right, my thanks to Jim Miller. My thanks to Sal Licata. My thanks to you for dealing with listening to my voice. Hopefully next week I'm better. And hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you missed any recent episodes of the pod, go to the archives and check them out. We did our third annual end of year spectacular last week with Peter Schrager from Good Morning Football and Andrew Perloff from CBS Sports Radio. 2 weeks ago, Brian Curtis from The Ringer joined me to do a year in review of sports media. Greg Olson from Fox was on the podcast recently. Richard Deitch from The Athletic, Mike Tirico from NBC, Kevin Burkhardt from Fox. So if you missed any of those, go into the archives, listen to them, download, subscribe, rate, and review. We'll read a review on the pod like we did this week. All right. Stay safe, take care, and we'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.